Obsession number 9875, reel 18.
Mr. Ashurst, reel 18. You were talking about the period from late 1916 into 1917 when you were in and out of various fronts. I believe during this time you also went on an NCO training course.
Yes, I did. I went down to a village a few miles away from us, and lovely billets with lovely billets and food and everything. We'd get anything we wanted in the village, and we had to learn how to go in houses and see how many troops we really could shove in them and things like that, you know. That's what we had to learn.
You'd been made a sergeant now, hadn't you, by this colonel?
Yes, I owe all this niss and up business.
That was what got you your promotion, you reckon?
A few weeks, not very long after that court case that I had with him, he promoted me sergeant. So I was a sergeant now, and I went on this course learning billeting and
what else,
map reading, you know, things like that, what there was and who there was and what wells there were and water and everything like that, going out and see what rooms they had and how many troops you could possibly put in there. That was the sort of thing I was supposed to learn. I don't think I learned so damn much, only, you know, nobody ever asked me to do it after anything like that.
Who was teaching you?
Oh, NCOs. RMC, you know, and NCOs.
Had you
sergeants and people like that.
You came back and you were in the line for a bit before you moved south to take over part of the front held by the French, probably just beyond the Somme.
Yes. The French were having a bit of a rough time, weren't they? That's what they were having a bit of a rough time, the French. So they sent us down to help them. But our officers had to go dressed as Frenchmen before we went in the line with them, you know. We had to go dressed as Frenchmen to look round the lines, the French. So they did do, and then we moved in, and it was quite a quiet place.
Do you know where exactly it was?
No.
Was it near the Somme River? Or further down still?
Oh, it'd be further down, I think. That's a part I have not much interest in. You know, I don't remember quite too well down there. I can remember it better. All I can remember is that they had some beautiful dugouts down there.
What were their dugouts like?
Oh, the French. And our lads, when they got in the trenches, they said they were struck from our trench to the Jerry's. Tracks, people walking across there and back, and I believe it was so.
Did you see them yourself?
What, the tracks? Oh yes, you could see where plainly where they'd walk, but there's nothing like that while we were there. And then of course the moment we got there the fun started, you see, and they started battering us. We came out, we went down these deep dugouts, oh, they must have been 30, 40 feet deep, wooded, beds in, gas doors up at top, oh, they were beautiful things, and you couldn't see them. You walked in the middle of a field and there it was. You walked down, there was the door, and you walked through it and down into the earth.
Did they fairly make you feel much more secure down in one of those dugouts?
Oh, yes, yes. You felt quite safe. You slept comfortable. You weren't disturbed. You know. God knows if a shell, like it's supposed to have done at Beaumont Tamil, one of our shells was supposed to have penetrated a 30-foot dugout there. And killed about, what was the number? 100 to 300, I forget which, soldiers down below.
But that sort of thing didn't worry you much? You didn't think it was likely to happen?
No.
Now, in March 1917, the Germans retired on the General Somme front. And I believe you were just about to do a raid the night when you fired. Could you take us through that story?
Yes, well, we were down the dugout, blacking our faces as usual, you know, ready for a raid. And while we were down there, a fella came dashing down. He said, "It's all right, the raid's off, lads." "Oh," he says, "Jerry's opped it." "He's opped it." So we all dashed up the steps out of the dugout into the open, and there's our fellas on top walking about. So we found out that it was true, he'd opped it. And it was, "Everybody get your things together." So we got our packs together and everything, ready to move off.
Had you had any idea at all that the Germans might be about to do this?
Oh, no. We were going on that raid a few minutes before.
What did you think had happened then?
Hey?
What did you think had happened?
Well, for a minute we thought the bloody war was over. Of course, you were sadly mistaken. Anyway, it set off and a few snipers go on first, you see. Like firing parties, they go in front of us. We set off in platoons, yes. And Jerry had left odd snipers here and there, you see, sat in a tree or a bush or somewhere. And he kept sniping us. Of course, we had the fellas always going ahead to wipe them out, you know. Machine guns. They went ahead and they wiped them out. And we carried on.
You got over into the German trenches then?
Oh, yes, they were empty. Empty and gone. And they had snipers in trees, like I said. Soon wiped them fellas out. They didn't do much damage and they were more afraid, I think, than anything else, of sitting there firing. Anyway, we followed on. And he's still gone, and we're going. And now and again, our shell came over, you know, from his runaway batteries. Didn't do much damage or anything like that. But we find out when we get on roads that he's cut everything down, all the trees, the promenade, like all the trees, he cut them down and dropped them across the road. Telephone wires, the same. You know, telegraph poles and wires were cut and dropped across the road so that our artillery couldn't come. Anyway, we kept going, and our artillery was stuttering behind and coming as fast as they could.
Were you involved in clearing these trees and telegraph poles?
No, not in the first place. We were after Jerry. We were chasing Jerry. We had to walk in the fields, you know, instead of the roads. And we don't pick anything up that he'd left in case it was a booby trap. And we don't drink no water. We had strict orders not to drink any water or anything. Drink anything.
What about the booby?
Only from our own truck, water truck.
What were these booby traps that you mentioned? Did you see any or hear of any?
There were bombs of all sorts with little strings attached. You know, stuck in a peg, and as you came with your foot and walked on, you'd pull the string and set the bomb off. You don't go down any dugouts. You didn't know what was happening there. You hadn't to touch anything, pick anything up. and you hadn't to drink any water.
Did you see any of these string booby traps yourself?
Oh, yes, we dodged them. And you, if you went near a door, you would probably see the wires hanging. You just catch it with your arm, you know, your hand, and the blasted bomb would go off. Anyway, we were dead nuts and anything like that. We knew what Jerry was. Anyway...
You knew not to look for souvenirs, then?
Well, there's no souvenirs, really, to look for then. Until we got... It came night time. And, of course, that slowed us up. And at night time, we could see big red lures in front of us. You know, in the sky. What else is that? Well, it seems Jerry was shifting the old folk out of one village into another. And the village he'd entered, he'd blow it up and burn it. You see, you pack them all in this one. And he told them the English would come and bring you some food. Didn't leave them any. He even entered the little gardens with the celeries and lettuces. To call that carrots. Yes. No dogs about, no cats about. No cattle whatever, of course. And no young women or young men. That was another thing. It was never in a village.
Where'd they go?
Within. Oh, he'd taken them with him. And we came to a railway cutting.
Before you go, when you took these villages, you met the village with the old people in, did they say anything about conditions under the Germans?
Oh, yes, they came out kissing us and throwing their arms round our necks as we marched in the road and kissing us and saying bon chance and all the rest of it, you know. And they said, husbands like Kumsa, you know.
What, the throat's cut?
Aye. That's the way the indicator did. They hadn't had them cut at all, but they'd taken them. You see, they got without them.
Were there any stories of any atrocities?
No, not really. Not with the old folks. They just bundled them in these other villages, you know, and let them live there. But, of course, I'm not saying nothing about the young women. We don't know what happened to them because they took them away with them. Except one fine young woman in the village of Nelson. Not Nelson.
Nestle.
That milk, you know. You used to have tin milk. All the lads said the tin milk come from there. Because it was Nestle. And there was one body young woman stood at the door there. Of course, we have an idea how she got away with it. She has been well in with the officers, you know. They'd let her stop there. And she was waving to us. And came to a cutting, and he decided to make a little stand at this cutting. A few men, you know, in the cutting, railway cutting. Anyway, he didn't stop us. We kept darting here and darting there until we frightened him. Finishing off, he went, and we got the cutting. We got a little dog too. We shot a little dog right through the haunches. It was trotted about, you know, but it had been shot, and it stuck with us for some time, that little dog.
Now, that was open, an attack in the... I know you always attacked in the open, but there were no trenches or anything.
Oh, no, no.
How did you feel about that open warfare? How did it... And you were advancing in Russia?
It wasn't very nice, because I laid there on the floor one day, and a shell came. It would be what, about 60 or 70 yards on one side of me, and I saw it hit the floor, not go off and bounce and bounce and bounce. A shell about that big, you know.
A yard.
You see. Anyway, he got one or two of us, of course, but we got to the cutting and took it and drove him off out of it. And then we came to a village that was burnt out, and they must have decided we were stopping there. Some fresh soldiers close behind us were coming through us, you see. So we was going to bed down in this old village where there was some crossroads. And the crossroads had been blown up, a great big deep cavity, you know, in the middle of these crossroads. And we decided, we had to stop in this village. But in the village was a big bonny chateau, you know, and it had been used as a hospital by Jerry, a temporary hospital, you know, so it weren't badly knocked about at all. Anyway, we settled down in this village while the other lads went through us and off. And following morning, of course, we were up early and we were filling this road, these crossroads, with bricks, trees, anything whatever to fill it in. Anything. We had to fill it in, you see. So that's what we were playing at. And while we were doing this, one or two fellas are wandering about the village, blind drunk. You know. They're arrested. And it seems that they found uncovered a cellar that Jerry had never known about. Been covered up before he came, you know, and he'd never found it. But they had. And they were drinking this wine. There's several of them, blind drunk, all arrested. Of course, the officers had the wine where he went to. I don't know, they had it, that's all we know. And, but this idea started off a regular looting business among the troops. You see, they thought, hello. Never found that wine, it's been hidden there, there'll be other things. So they were going through these houses with picks and shovels, and if they saw a mark on the wall, they knocked it down, and they got umpteen things, you know, cash and bedding and musical instruments, every sort of thing you could think of they had.
Wasn't looting illegal? Well, it was illegal.
Yes, of course.
Did the officers and the NCOs not try and put a stop to it?
Oh, no. Well, it was no use. They weren't doing much harm. Looking through these old buildings that were already burned by the cellars. We lived in the cellars.
You were in the cellar of the chateau, were you?
But we found a nice little cellar in the chateau. And we decided, the four sergeants of us, you know, the four platoons, we would have that place for us. And all my men were down in the kitchen of the chateau, on the floor. They were in the kitchen. And we had this little place, and we had a batman to fetch us our tea, you know, and bacon. And it was beautiful, only a little tiny place, but it had a little stove in and everything, so it was quite a thing for me and the sergeants, these other sergeants. So night when we get down in our little place wrapped in our blankets and so forth, Waller, you know, the sergeant, one of the sergeants, he said, "Hey chaps, what about us having a look round for some stuff?" He said, "We want some of the tech home." "I know, where are we going to look?" I know a place, he said. Oh. He says, you know when you go down the drive, went down the drive to the big house, you know, down the drive from the lane. And he said, did you not notice on the right-hand side a building? A small building? Yes, yeah. He said, you know what that was? No. That's the family vault, he says. Oh. Of course, we're listening to him. He said, well, you know, these Frenchmen, he says, the fellows owns this, must be a wealthy man, you know. I said, oh, yes. He said, well, these Frenchmen, when they bury the dead, they bury them with the rings on and things. Oh, that did it. The moment he started like that, oh, no, Swallow, no, nothing doing, my lad. Oh, dear, no. We were all frightened to death, the other three of us, barring. Oh, don't be soft, he said. Don't be daft. He says, I've shaved men scores of times when they pulled their faces and groaned at me. They're dead when they were dead, he meant, you know.
Why would he shave them then?
He was a barber, you know, of some sort. And,
But why would he shave them when they were dead, if you see what I mean?
Well, they really do so. Yes. And, So, he said he had anyway. He said he groaned when he leaned on the chest. Anyway. No, we're not having anything to do with that. Don't be soft. Don't be daft, he said. We're going to have a look tonight. So, he said, that's definite. Now, he said, Ashes, that was me. Your platoon's on guard on that drive, aren't they? I said, yes. There's green on it. Right, he says, that'll be your job. You get out, talk to Green, take him to yon lane end, you know, keep him there while we've time enough to get through these bushes and into the vault. So he said, now, that'll do, we're going to do that. So he got his entrance into it. He says, somebody got matches and a candle? Yes. So he said, well, get off. I went off, left him, and I met Green on the drive. He challenged me. I said, it's the sergeant. I said, the orderly officer's nipping round tonight, Green. Don't let him catch you off duty. I'm smoking her out. He'll not catch me. So I said, anyway, come on, I'll have a walk with you. And I lit a cigarette and said, smoke that while we're going to the lane. So we walked to the lane and having a nice chat. And I chatted to him as long as I could there, you know, till I made sure they had landed. Then I left him and made my way back. When I thought I was out of hearing from him, I dived in the bushes onto the vault door. And it was partly open, you know, a big heavy door, iron door. I said, hello, pitch black inside, you know. Voice inside, come in, come in. So I shoved the door open and got in, couldn't see a thing. They were only that far off me, but I couldn't see them. You couldn't see, it was that black, you couldn't see nothing, nobody. You just had to feel for them like that. So... what's the name said, there was a carpet on the floor, well worn, you know, it had been there all the war. So you can tell how worn it was with German feet and one thing and another. He said, there's a trap door somewhere under this carpet. Get down and find it. Anyway, he found it. He got down and he found it. We shifted, pulled the carpet back and opened the door. Got us together again. Come here. Now follow me, one behind me. Keep in touch with me. We followed him down the stone steps. Oh, about 8 or 9 stone steps. And I was frightened to death, me. I expected somebody rushing out with a big sword and slashing us up. I did. and the other two fellows were saying, but not Waller. He was leading. When he got to what he thought was the bottom, he said, "Now then, have you shut the door?" "Sure." "Yes, we shut it." "Right, strike a light," he says. "Light that candle. Nobody can see us now." So we struck a match and lit the candle, and we've come down the steps, you know, then there's this opening and a passage down there to the right, a big black curtains hanging, you know, on either side with gold braid. Don't know what it said, but there's gold braid on them. And we lit the candle, and it was flickering. And then Waller, he walked inside to these curtains, and he shifted one like that, you know. I fully expected something happening to me, but it didn't. Well, he no sooner shifted curtain like that than he came out again. And he's a violin case about that big. Just like a violin case. Exactly like a violin case. "We've got it, lads," he says. So he brought it out. "Bring that light up here." Puts it on the floor. Gets his entrance in tool out and hooks the lid open. Oh, a lovely sight. It was really a lovely, a beautiful sight. There was a gold cross in it with a black ebony base, you know, and a mirror, a little mirror in the middle. Around this little mirror was diamonds, and the sun's rays, as they shot out, they made the cross. You see, sun, the gold rays, they made the cross. Never seen nothing nicer. There was green emeralds in the base and red rubies round it, you know. "Come on." He shut the door, banged it to. "Come on," he says, "back to our little hut as fast as you can, as quiet as you can." That's exactly what we did. And we got there and he started to examine it. First of all, he flicked the diamonds out with his jackknife. You know, the point of it, and he flicked them out. There would be about what? There would be about 26 or 28, something like that, going round it, you know. And he flicked the what's the names out of the base. And he had one of us breaking this case up into little bits, you know, smashing it up with an entrenching tool. And putting it in our little fire, burning it, you know, so much at a time, till we burned the whole lot. And you come to the goal then, when he sorted the stones out. One fellow says, "What are we doing with this? Shall we throw it in the river?" That was the gold cross. "Not bloody likely," says fella. "Throw precious gold away?" "Not bloody likely," he says. So he started with his entrenching tool to break it up into little pieces about as big as your nail, chopping it up. He says, "You know, good gold's fairly soft, you know." And there's so many pieces. Well, I had so many pieces of gold, umpteen pieces of bits of gold, about 7 or 8 diamonds, one red one, I think it was, only one, and one green one each, you know, or was it 2? Anyway, no more. And we burned everything belonging to it, that little stove, the case, the box and everything, the base, we burned that. And went to sleep till morning. Next morning, we go out on parade. You go up towards the house, and there's a car comes driving in with a French staff officer, English staff officer, and a civilian. Now, what's coming off? Drives right up to the kitchen door of the chateau, you know. And he said something to one of our officers. And one of our officers told a couple of men to get a pick and shovel. So they went and fetched a pick and shovel. And there they were digging the kitchen up. Our fellows, they've been asleep all night here, my lads. They started digging it up. They'd gone down about that far, 6 or 7 inches. They came to waterproof parcels, you know. Yeah. And God knows what was in them. And there was some precious stuff in them. Because I know my officer, I said to Tosser once, he was looking at one thing. I said, what's that, sir? He said, that's a clock. Must have been worth 5,000 quid, that clock. Must have been.